As he said, my name is John, my wife Robin, and I have two teenagers with me, Ashton and Emma. My son wasn't able to make it this morning. It is an honor to be with you today. Take a look at my watch. They told me to be done by 12:30, so if that's all right with you, okay? No, little preacher humor, don't freak out if you're a guest. I'm just kidding, okay? I'm not one of those kind of missionaries. We've been in ministry for a long time, it seems, but about 14, almost 15 years ago, God messed up our world. We were associate pastors at a mega church in Dallas, a very fast-growing church. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times, you know, one of those. A great church. The pastor there is still my pastor, my mentor. And God, at some point we prayed this, actually when we first got married, and we continue to pray this prayer, God, anything, anytime, anywhere, for any reason, we commit our lives and our family to you. Well, he took us up on that. And so we ended up in Germany. God just tapped us up. We were up praying one night, my wife and I, and God just tapped us on the shoulder and said, I need you to move to Germany. I need you there. I have things for you there. And so we went and we served at a church in addition to our main call or our main... Oh, is there something for the kids? If there are kids in here? Looks okay. Good. So I see people kind of tapping kids. So. And so we were there, and our main call, the main thing that God has placed on our life is to train leaders, to empower leaders. And so we were there equipping and training and working with pastors and youth pastors and worship leaders and all, basically anybody in church or ministry leadership. While we were there, we also served at a church for a while. We helped plant a number of churches. And at some point, actually about April-ish of 2009, we were suffering horribly for Jesus, leading worship in the Alps and at a pastor's conference. I wouldn't wish it on my enemy. And that was a joke. And as we were there, sorry, you have my permission today to laugh, even if you laugh at me. That is okay as well. As we were there, just leading worship for this group, God spoke to us both. He started challenging me to take crazy risks. It was almost like, John, will you jump out of a plane without a parachute for me? Will you do things that others have said no? And you know, in those times when God's just talking to you, do you know what I mean? I don't hear an audible voice. If you do, God bless you. That doesn't work for me. But just in my heart, I knew he was talking to me. And I'm weeping, and I just know that God's talking to me. John, I need you to do something for me. And how can you not say yes? Well, at the same time, he's talking to my wife saying, I need you to plant a church. And after this service, I'm excited. Honey, guess what God told me? And she just kind of goes, oh, no. And I said, what? She said, well, I believe God told me to plant a church. And I was like, oh, no. And so a year and a half later, we planted a church in Freiburg, Germany, where less than 1% of the population is involved in church, even on Christmas and Easter. Europe-wide, less than 2% of the population are born again, or what we would call, you know, have a relationship with Christ. And so for me, I am uniquely wired to be with people that are far from God. I enjoy people that don't agree with me. I enjoy people that think that my words about Jesus are stupid. I love people that are open, but that are far from God. That's how God's wired me. And so we're there when we plant this church, and God just did something bigger than us. He brought together a team of 20, 25 individuals, mainly young adults, young university students. Freiburg has a renowned, world-renowned university. And we planted something that was just insane, and we saw well over 100 people come to Christ in secular post-Christian Germany, and they're still. We handed off the church in August of last year to a younger pastor. He's taken the reins and is run with it. He's doing taking the baton and is run with it and is doing a great job. And so we knew that God was sending us back here, and we knew some of the things. We're doing a lot of coaching and training for pastors, mainly church planters at this point, because we survived the process. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 6 months. And we were able to connect with your leadership team here, your interim pastor and your leadership team, and we offered to be up to speak if he needed us to, and he asked us to today. So when he first asked if I would be willing to speak today, this was a month or so ago, almost instantly, really within a day or two as I started praying, I really feel that God gave me a message, not just for you, but for me, a message for us today. This is something I'm learning. I would love to tell you that I've got this down. Guess what? We're all trying to figure this out. So if you're here today and you are imperfect, you are in the right place. None of us has it down. None of us. I gave my life to Jesus 30-something years ago. I just looked 25. And don't laugh. And okay, go ahead and laugh. But we're all trying to figure this out. So if you've got a Bible, mine's on my iPad here, go ahead and open it to Luke chapter 10. I want to talk to you today about a life with no regrets. I want to talk to you today about a life, living a life with no regrets. Now, as we talk about this, can I tell you a huge regret I have? When my wife was found out she was pregnant with Emma, our youngest, it was right before a service that she told me. Now, once again, I'm in this church. I'm getting ready to do service for about 500 teenagers, and it's just, there's things. Before a service is the worst time to talk to a preacher, you know? And especially when you're trying to manage leaders and volunteers, and a kid just came up and said, my world fell apart, you know, my parents are divorcing, and you got all these things coming at you, and my wife comes up and says, John, I got to talk to you. Now, I'm not stupid. I may not be the smartest man. I might not be the smartest man, as Forrest Gump said, but I'm really not stupid. And so I stop, and I say, yeah, honey, you got to make it quick, but you have my full attention. And that wasn't the truth. She said, I don't remember the words, something like, you know, I just found out we're going to have a baby. And I'm like, baby, that's awesome. Listen, I'll talk to you after service. And I went on with... And so after the service, she said, nothing? Really? Nothing? Sometimes we just miss those things that fly right by us. We all have regrets. We all have things that we wish we would have done. Now, I believe based on some scriptures, if you want to just write this down, we don't have it on the screen for you today, but you can just write it down. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. Ephesians 2 verse 10 says that we're God's handcrafted, we're His proof of His creative and artistic ability. We're His workmanship. And we've been created in Christ Jesus for good works that God prepared in advance for us to do. There are things that God has created each and every one of us to do. Doesn't matter how young you are, doesn't matter how old you are, there are things in front of us. When you stop breathing, when you end up with Jesus in heaven, you're done. Until then, God has things that He has placed in front of us, things that we are to accomplish. The goal for us is to connect with Him and do that. There's an amazing, my life verse is in Acts chapter 13 and verse 36. Acts 13:36. It says, David served God's purpose in his generation, and then he died. That is my dream. God, that I'll do anything that you want of me, that I will serve your purpose in my generation, among my time, while I'm here on this earth. I'll do what you've called me to do. Sometimes we're not too good at it. Sometimes we just plain mess up. Actually, last week I was having coffee with Pastor Richard, and the day before I had gone to Walmart to go shopping. You know, everybody's favorite place, Walmart, not mine. But I had just gone to Walmart to go shopping, and there was a guy looked homeless sitting outside in a wheelchair, and I just kind of had this fleeting thought in my heart: buy that guy something to eat. I thought, oh, you know, at some point, and I just It was in my heart. No, really, buy that guy something to eat. And I recognized that that was God speaking in my heart. And so I thought, well, I only have to grab a couple things. Let me, I'll just go in and get those, and then I'll bring him out, you know, come out and see what he wants, invite him into McDonald's, sit down. I don't like to just buy food for people or give them money and walk away. I think if you're going to do that, you sit down and you invest time with people. You talk with them. You find out their story. If you've got, you know, as much time as you can give, you serve. You don't just throw money at the problem. You know what I'm saying? People want to be heard. People want to be listened to. And so I thought, well, I've got things to do. Let me, you know, I've got my list of four or five things, the honey-do list, you know, in my head that I don't want to forget. I went in and I go out and I'm ready. You know, I've got some cash in my hand. Let's go in and get something. He's gone. I missed an opportunity. I mean, it was a God opportunity, and I know it. I have regrets. I believe we're all human. I believe we all do. We want to talk about living a life with no regrets today. And so if you'll look in Luke chapter 10 there, you'll see a story where Jesus is being confronted by a religious teacher, the lawyers of that day. You remember it was a religious ruled society, kind of like it is today in the Middle East. The religious leaders are the ones that have the control. And so a legal expert in the Jewish law, this is going to be somebody that has some weight in society. But if we've got the words up here on the screen, in case you didn't bring a Bible, let me encourage you, bring a Bible to church. Mine's right here. Okay, I've got it in red. You can't really see it there, but mine's in red. But bring a Bible to church. Bring a Bible. It does something. And the more senses you use when you are reading something or when you are studying something, the longer the thing, whatever it is you're studying, stays with you. So students, this will help you. This is why they give you paper books instead of everything on your iPad, because you're using more senses, your tactile senses, your sight, and this will help you. And that's what I believe. This is why we need to read it. But look in verse 25. Just then a religion scholar stood up with a question to test Jesus. Teacher, what do I need to do to get eternal life? Now, if you were a preacher, man, yeah, glad you asked. That's the question of all questions, right? But Jesus also realized, look, the guy's just, he's just trying to catch me in something. And so Jesus responds, you'll see it there. Jesus responds and he says, oh, I'm reading this out of the Message translation. This is kind of a more artistic, I may be in my 40s, not confirming or denying that, but I may be in my 40s, but I still think like a 20-something year old. But I like this translation. I believe it makes it a little more modern. It's a little more artistic. I'm an artsy guy. It says, Jesus answered, what's written in God's law? How do you interpret it? The man answers that you love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and muscle and intelligence, and that you love your neighbor as well as you do yourself. Good answer, Jesus said. Do this and you will live. Now, I want to point something out to you, and if you forget everything else in this message, I need you to catch this one sentence. Love God, love people. The two cannot be separated. You cannot take the love for people away from a love for God and say, well, I'm doing what God's called me to do. I'm living a life that pleases God. You cannot take a love for people away from a love for God. It doesn't work. If you're going to fulfill what God has for you in life, love God and love people, the two cannot be separated. The two are together. If my horizontal relationships, my relationships here are not right, I'm going to have a problem with my vertical relationship with God. I used to think when I was a teenager that if you were really pious, or if you were really, I grew up Catholic, and so, you know, the really pious holy guys were the monks that lived in a monastery and had very little contact with the outside world. I believe differently today. If that's what God's called them to do, go for it. But I believe differently. I don't think you can separate the love for God from the love for people. The man said, Jesus said, "What? How do you read in your law? What's the most important thing?" Remember, the guy was a legal expert. The guy said, love the Lord with all your passion and prayer and intelligence, muscle. And he pretty much covers everything, right? And love your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus says, do this and you will live. Now, the religious the religious teachers of the law, these guys were the enforcers. They weren't the ones that stopped to help you. They weren't like AAA, you know, your car breaks down at the side of the road. They don't come and, you know, pull up with a tow truck and, here, let me give you some gas. Let me put air in your tires. Let me help you. They're the ones that showed up with a ticket book and say, well, you are in violation of section 15, you know, subparagraph 5. You are not allowed to park this piece of junk, this broken down car on the side of the highway. That's the way they were. They didn't bother to help. They just wanted to make sure that you obeyed the rules. And so this guy, it says, if you'll follow along, the next one says, next verse says, he was looking for a loophole. Religious people always look for loopholes. If you are looking for a way to not have to do what the Bible says, whether that's forgiveness, whether that's service, whether that's giving, do you understand? If you're looking for a loophole, there's something not right in your heart that you need to change. Now, the good news is, God will help you change it. He's merciful. He's gracious. But we're talking about living a life with no regrets. It says, looking for a loophole, he asks, well, and just how would you define neighbor? Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Now, Jesus goes on and he starts to tell a story. He says this. In verse 30, Jesus answered by telling a story. There was once a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. On the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes, they beat him up, and went off, leaving him half dead. Luckily, a priest was on his way down the same road. But when he saw the man, he angled across to the other side. Then a Levite religious man showed up, and he also avoided the injured man. Verse 33, a Samaritan traveling the road came on him. When he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfecting and bandaging his wounds. Then he lifted him onto his donkey, led him to an inn, and made him comfortable. In the morning, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take good care of him. If it costs any more, put it on my bill. I'll pay you on my way back. What do you think? Jesus said. Which of the three became a neighbor to the man attacked by robbers? The man replied, the one who treated him kindly. The religion scholar replied. Jesus said, go and do the same. Now, as I look at this, let's look at the people involved in the stories. There's a traveler, and he just happened to be traveling down. This is the road here. This is an early 1900s picture of the road to Jericho. It drops over 3,000 feet, like 3,400 feet in the space of 15 miles from up on the mountains in Jerusalem down to Jericho, which is down in the Jordan Valley. I mean, right there. And you'll see, I mean, it's the perfect place for an ambush. And it was known as the Bloody Pass in that day. Even into the 18th and 19th century, as I was doing research, you know, you can find anything on Wikipedia, right? As I was doing research, I found out that even writings, even in the 18th and, early 19th and the early 20th century said, be careful, you know, make sure that you're traveling in groups if you're traveling down the road down to Jericho. Even to this day, the road doesn't look like this anymore. It's paved. I was on it. Got to go there a couple years ago on a study tour. But it's not the safest place. And so the man was traveling down there. He got waylaid, beaten up. They took his clothes. They took his stuff. You know, the robbers, they did what robbers do. They beat him up, took his stuff, right? They're the bad guys, the toughies. If you're from England, he's a baddie. Then we see a priest that comes along. Now, a priest, this is a guy that is supposed to represent God and his heart to people and represent people to God. His job was to connect God and man. He sees the man and he angles over to the other, he crosses by on the other side of the street. I heard somebody say that the reason he crossed by on the other side was so that the man wouldn't recognize him and be able to say who didn't help him. But he crossed, it's the same as a pastor or a church leader. Then it says a Levite came. Now, these were people that worked in the temple. This would be like a supportive staff or an elder or a deacon in a church. Another man, they had a reputation for mercy, a reputation for help. He walks up. It says he walked up and he saw the man. So he walked up and, you know, kind of kicked the tires. The guy's still breathing. And he wanders on. Then this Samaritan shows up. Now, if you don't know the background, the Jews hated the Samaritans. The Samaritans hated the Jews. Actually, if you saw at the end of that passage when Jesus said, who was the neighbor? The man didn't even say, the religious leader didn't even say, the Samaritan. He said, the one who had mercy on him. Wouldn't even refer to him by his nationality. Jesus was confronting racial prejudices. And we have them. Whether it's racial, whether it's, greasy-haired biker dude. Sorry if you're in here today and you're greasy. I don't see any greasy-haired biker dudes. Good, okay. You know, whether it's a gangster, whether it's somebody that's poor and hurting or homeless. We all deal with these. Every one of us does. But Jesus confronts that. Picture your enemy. You're laying there on the road, you've been beaten up, and a Taliban guy comes up. This is the story he's telling. As he's telling the story, these guys are thinking, yep, off with his head, it's over. And Jesus said, no, he stops, pulls out his little medicine kit, and he begins to bandage the guy's wound. What? He's going to kill him, right? He's going to make him well and then kill him, right? Puts the injured man on his own donkey, and he walks down the pass with this guy. You understand, it was probably still a dangerous situation. The robbers could have still been there, right? The man doesn't just do that. He takes him to an inn. Out of his own pocket, he pays the innkeeper, and he says, take care of him. Make him well. When I pass back through, if there's anything left, I'll take care of it. Jesus is confronting the man's hypocrisy. He's confronting the religious leader's unwillingness to help. And he's confronting racial stereotypes. But he goes on, and he said, basically, the end of the story is, you've missed a God-given opportunity. Because a love for God and a love for people cannot be separated. You can't have one without the other. If you love God, you will love people. Actually, the more you love God, I believe the more you love people. Have you ever read about Jesus? You ever followed his life? The more you love God, the more you will love people. We all have missed opportunities. I'm determined not to miss opportunities. That's why it broke my heart the other day when I missed the opportunity with the guy outside of Walmart. God gives us to these because he wants us to spread his core values in the earth. Now, as I look, I see a few reasons why we don't take advantage of opportunities. I think safety is a big deal. Martin Luther King, as he was preaching on this the day before he was murdered, he said that it seems like the priest and the Levite, the two religious leaders, their question was, what happens to me if I stop and help? But it seems like the Samaritan, his question was, what happens to me if I don't stop and help? Or what will happen to him if I don't stop and help? God has created us to be life givers. God has created us to bring light to a very dark world. He's created us to change the world as you and I know it. We cannot have an impact if we're not going to get our hands messy. It is messy helping people. It is not easy. You ever raised kids? I see a few people. There's all kind of mess. And when they have kids, you're like, uh-huh, serves you right. The word diaper spelled backwards is repaid. Isn't that the truth? It's messy helping people. It's very inconvenient, which is another reason why we don't help. I don't have time. You know, actually, Jesus, I believe in confronting the religious leaders, was confronting them for spending all their time in church and not having enough time to serve people. God has created us to serve. God has created us to to love. God has created us to help. Sometimes there's a financial cost involved. Maybe you've had a time where God's told you to give away money, or God's told you to give away things. And there's sometimes when it's the easiest thing in the world. And there are sometimes where it is a sacrifice. There have been times where we felt like God told us to empty our wallets, our checking account, and everything. And today I'm thankful. You can't outgive God. He is so generous. He takes such good care of us. He knows how to rescue and how to help. People will criticize your motives. Well, you're just doing that because you want to feel good about yourself. They're not the ones that matter. It's God. I think all of these can be, we look at it, all of these excuses are a result of selfishness. It's a result of selfishness. That's not who God has created us to be. God's antidote for selfishness is giving, a life of giving, a life of serving, a life that goes beyond what God is, what is comfortable for us, goes beyond the status quo. It's important that we get this. Guys, God has created us to impact our world. God has created us to do something significant. He's given us gifts and dreams and hopes. He's given us skills and abilities, not for us, not just so that we can make money. He's given them to us so that we can serve, so that we can love, so that we can impact the people around us. You know, you're not here for yourself. If it was all about us, my youth pastor used to say 30-something years ago, he used to say that if it was all about us and all there was to life was to giving our hearts, was about giving our lives to Jesus and that was it, there would be a pistol in the back of every Bible and we'd give that Bible to a person that gave their life to Jesus and it's over, you're in heaven. It's not like that. God's got us here to serve. He's got us here. He needs, you realize there is no plan B. How many of you, you first experienced Jesus because an angel appeared to you? How many of you it was because of a person? Maybe a person invited you to church. Maybe a person made you lunch. Maybe a person helped you when you were down. Maybe a person served you. God doesn't have a plan B. Sometimes some people see angels. Cool stories. I think it would freak me out. You're God's plan A. Not just plan A. You're His only plan. Does God need me? He can find people. But He chooses to use you, invite you into the family business of drawing people to Him. Do you know how you earn that? I'm going way off my notes. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's on my heart, though. Do you know how you earn the right to speak into somebody's life? You serve them. You give. Jesus said there's not any greater love, John 15:13, no greater love that you could ever exhibit or show than a person would lay down their life for their friends. This life is all about sacrifice. And I know that's not pleasant, especially you teenagers. I get it. I was a youth pastor for 20 years. God has created us to do something significant. But we can't do it on our own without His help. We've got to love God and we've got to love people. The two cannot be separated. You've got people out there today doing great things as far as digging wells for places that don't have clean water, as far as feeding the hungry and clothing the homeless. But if it's not a result, an outflow of God, a relationship with God, it's missing the point. I'm not saying that we have to preach every time either. That's not the way. Listen, I'll buy you lunch if you'll sit there and listen to me preach you a sermon. That's stupid. Jesus didn't do that. That's not what God expects of us. God expects us to serve and to love. All right, so let me give you a take-home question. I need to move on here. We're just about done. It's almost 12:30. Just kidding. The take-home question. Where's your road to Jericho? Where does God want to use you? I believe, my prayer has been that over this next week, you will see someone and that you will know that that is God saying, you be my hands, you be my feet, you be my mouthpiece. I don't believe you have to preach every time you serve someone. I believe you should pray and ask God for the opportunity, but if it's not there, you serve with no strings attached like Jesus did. All right, so here are some action steps. How to live a life with no regrets. How to live a life with no regrets. Number one, determine to serve one person every day that can't or won't pay you back. Determine to serve someone every day that can't or won't pay you back. Let me give you another one. Take risks for God. This is the crazy one. Serving God is risky. But you remember in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is the Sermon on the Mount. If you guys have been in church, if you're not, you don't get all this Bible stuff. We're happy to talk with you afterwards, give you a Bible. See what he says? Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. In the NIV translation, it says that you're a city set on a hill. Shine your light. Jesus said, you're the light of the world. You're the light of the world. In John chapter 1, you can just write that down, John chapter 1, the Bible says that the light shines where? Do you remember that? The light shines, if you've heard it, in the darkness. We're created to be the light of the world. Where does the light shine? In darkness. In all honesty, I was not created to shine among other lights. My light doesn't make much of a difference among other lights. I mean, it's good. We need to come together as a family, as a church. It's the communal celebration of Jesus' resurrection. But I was created to be a light out there in the darkness, in very dark places. You were created to be a light in very dark places. It's not safe. It's risky. It's threatening. It's uncomfortable. But it's what you were created to do. It's who you were created to be. God has no plan B. You are His plan A and only plan. So determine to take risks for God. I love what Mark Batterson says. He says, we've got to stop living as if the goal of life is to arrive safely at death. The goal of life is to give everything. I was a wrestler. You wouldn't know it today, but I was a wrestler. I was good. I was good as a teenager in high school. Got to go to state a few times. And I had this coach. He was just borderline abusive, you know. It was all about winning. But he used to say to us, don't leave anything on the mat. You give everything you got. You need to be so exhausted at the end of your match that we have to carry you off. You give everything you got on the mat. I believe that's what God says to us. Guys, we have one life. One life to make a difference. God says, don't leave anything on the mat. Give of yourself. Serve. Do what God's called you to do. So the first one was determined to pay, to serve someone that can't or won't pay you back. The second one was take risks. And let me give you the third one. Ask God for help. Ask God for help. Your prayer can go like this. God, I want to be a light for you. God, I want to serve you. Help me to see opportunities when they come. Help me to recognize them and help me to take advantage of them. Ask Him for help. Every day when I drive the girls to school, every day in the car, we pray. And I say, God, I ask you to remind us that we are life givers. You've created us to carry your life and to give it to people. God has created us to be life givers. We're here for a purpose. What would the world be like if we all did this? If just the people in this room did this? What do you think Pipe Creek and the surrounding communities would be like? Do you think it would make a difference? I mean, look around. We've got enough people in this room to make an impact in this community. What would happen if everybody said, yeah, God, it's me. Here am I, God. Send me. Use me. Do you think it would make a difference? Do you really believe that? Yeah, John, I can't. Yes, you can. Yeah, but my gift won't make a difference. Yes, it will. You matter. God doesn't have a plan B. And if you love God, you will love people enough to serve. Do just like Jesus said, go and do the same. Have compassion. Have mercy. Let God use you. Do something significant with your life. God desires to use you. You know, a number of years ago, they had a meeting of the governors of the states or whatever. They had a big, you know, nationwide convention. And as they got together, someone asked a question. And I don't even remember why. I don't even remember all the context. But I remember reading about it. Somebody got up and asked the question, what is the greatest thing in the world? And so you got all these governors, you know, all these guys that like to say their words. And I mean, nobody could answer because what do you say to that? What's the greatest thing in the world? Well, coming from my state, you know. Well, if you're from Texas, I get that. Although I was born and raised in Indiana, so got to give shout out and props to Indiana, right? I'm such a gangster. And you realize that, right? You can tell by the way I'm dressed. But they said, "What is the greatest thing in the world?" Nobody answered. Finally, a young aide, I mean, not even somebody with a voice, just an aide or an assistant to one of the governors, got up and said, the greatest thing in the world is that we can leave the past behind us, that we don't have to live in yesterday. I believe you have regrets. You're human. I do too. The good news is we don't have to let yesterday create our tomorrow. The whole message of Easter, which is next, by the way, here's something you can do starting today. Invite somebody to church next Sunday. 80% of people that ever visit a church do so because somebody personally invites them. But I believe the whole message of resurrection is new life, a fresh start, new beginnings. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what's been done to you. Unfortunately, in a group of people this size, there have been some very horrible things that have been done to people. People are here suffering. You don't know. They're not going to tell you. But I want you to know your yesterday does not have any power in your tomorrow unless you give it power. Greatest thing in the world is that our tomorrow is not ruled by our yesterday. If Jesus is alive, and he is, there's hope. I want to invite the praise team to come back up. I don't know where you stand with Jesus today. I don't know where you're at. Maybe you've been serving him for years. Maybe things are going great. Maybe you've been kind of playing the game. Maybe somebody drug you to church. You're going to go get some free barbecue after service. That's okay too. Glad you're here. Welcome to church today. Sorry you're stuck with a crazy missionary from Germany. But I want to give you the opportunity to make things right. While you want to come on up, brother. While they play one more song, and I'm just totally lost your name. I'm so sorry, Jeff. And I never did drugs. I don't have an excuse. Brother Jeff and I are going to be up front. We would be honored to pray with you. Maybe you need to recommit your life to Christ if you've been away from him. Maybe you've never really taken that step and stepped across the line where you say, God, I'm giving you everything I've got. I'm giving you my whole life. Maybe you just need prayer for something. While they sing this last song, though, we'll be up here to pray for you. All right? So
please stand. Go ahead.